We're in the book of James this morning in the fourth chapter, finishing it up, beginning in the 13th verse. So from verse 13 down through verse 15, James is trying to give us the right attitude that we should have towards the will of God. When we're out of the will of God, then it brings trouble to our families, to our lives. We see that in the case of Lot. Abraham gave Lot a choice. You take the high road, I'll take the low road. You take the low road, I'll take the high road. So he surveyed the land from the top of that hill and saw how the plain was well watered toward Sodom, and that's the way he went. And before long, we find him in a very ungodly place, Sodom and Gomorrah, where Peter in the New Testament tells us that every day his righteous soul was vexed in hearing and seeing the deeds of the ungodly. Not a good place to be. He was out of the will of God, and he brought great trouble and tragedy to his family. But you know, David was the same way. When you go back to 2 Samuel chapter 11, it is my personal belief that David was out of the will of God. And I'll tell you why I believe that from 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 1. And it came to pass, after the year was expired, at the time when kings go forth to battle, that David sent Joab. And he tarried there in Jerusalem. Now, David was the leader of his people. It was the time when leaders should have gone out to battle, but he didn't go. He sent Joab, and I think that was the whole reason he got in trouble. If he had gone out with the army like he should have gone, he wouldn't have been looking on that rooftop down on Bathsheba taking a bath. And being out of the will of God in all of that, he brought great everlasting trouble to his house and his kingdom. As a matter of fact, God could say in the very next chapter, in verse 10, "Now, therefore, the sword shall never depart from thine house, because thou hast despised me and hast taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be thy wife." The sword shall never depart from thy house. And so it was. There was one conflict after another in his own family, in his own house. You look at Jonah's life. Jonah fought against the will of God. He said, "You go this way." Jonah says, "I'm going this way." And his disobedience and being out of the will of God, I like what Warren Wiersbe says about this. He was almost responsible for sending a shipload of heathen sailors to a watery grave. Trouble in his life. Trouble we bring to others around us. So, how do you see the will of God this morning? Is it like a bad medicine that we have got to take? Or on the other hand, do we see it as the gracious evidence of God's love to us? That's the way we ought to see it. But I'm afraid too many times, and I include myself in that, it's a bitter medicine that I've got to take. And so, Sometimes people can fear to do things in the will of God because they feel like that's dangerous. But I tell you, the real danger comes when we act out of the will of God. There's where the real danger lies, in not doing the will of God. So the safest place that we can be in our life is right in the middle of the will of God. The safest place, right in the middle of the will of God. It's full of safety and blessedness. Every good thing you can think about is being in the center of God's will. So why then do I fight against it so much? Why do we all fight against it so much? Well, I guess that's one of the mysteries of life that we may never know. We know a little bit of it because I'm a sinner and I like my own selfish way. And so I fight against God's will because I want it my way. Well, we have four reasons given to us here in James as to why we should not ignore or neglect the will of God in our life. Beginning with number one, James chapter 4 and verse 13. All right. Go to now. Ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. Well, life is full of complications. Every day is a day full of decisions we have to make. We have a life full of running here and there. We have a life of buying and selling and gaining and losing. Life is full of people and places. Life is full of many different complications. And so isn't it a wonderful blessing when we can have the guidance of God's will to get us through the maze of life? Yes, it is. It's such a wonderful blessing because of life's complications. He is our guide. You know, this is what David said in Psalm 73. Psalm 73 and verse 24. Psalm 73 and 24. Now, Brother Thomas Mann used this text as a sermon long time ago, and it is a sermon in itself. Number 24. Thou shalt guide me with thy counsel. And a counsel is just another way of saying your will or your word. Thou shalt guide me with thy counsel and afterward receive me to glory. So my whole life long, your whole life long, is guided by the God of heaven and earth. He guides you with His will. And what a blessing to help us get through this thing called life with all of its mazes and complications. God is there to guide us. And then in the end, to receive us to glory. Well, the second thing he says is found in the 14th verse, James chapter 4, verse 14. He says, whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. Life's uncertainties. We see it all around us. Life is full of uncertainties. When you look at Proverbs chapter 27, the wise man can tell us in verse 1, He says, boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. So here these men are in James chapter 4, very certainly saying, we're going to go over here, and we're going to go to such and such a city, and we're going to buy and sell and get gain, and we're going to stay there a whole year. So they've got the whole year planned out, and we can't even see what a day brings forth. Life is full of uncertainty. You can't plan your life out. We do not have the ability to plan our life out. The wise man can tell us again in Proverbs 16 and verse 33 that the lot is cast into the lap, but the whole disposing thereof is of the Lord. Another way to say that in modern English is, man proposes, but God disposes. So we can make our plans, but if we make them without bringing the Lord into them and saying, if it's according to the will of God, we'll do this and this and this, then I become a very foolish person to try to plan my life out. A long way down the road when I cannot even see tomorrow. All right, the last part of that verse 14. James says, not only because of life's complications, not only because of life's uncertainty, but because of life's shortness, because of its brevity, I need the will of God in my life. Look what he says, verse 14, in the last part. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. You know, when you're young, it seems like life is going to last a long time. But when you see that in the light of eternity, it's just a small vapor and it's gone. The shortness of life, the brevity of life. So that's why Job could say so much about the brevity of life in Job chapter 7. He says in verse 6, my days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and are spent without hope. Now that weaver's shuttle is just flying, trying to weave that thing and throw it in the right place and all that. It's a work of art when you master weaving. And it's just flying, that shuttle is. And he says, that's the way my life is. My life is faster than a weaver's shuttle. That's how fast it goes. He says again in the 8th chapter and the 9th verse, for we are but of yesterday, and know nothing, because our days upon earth are a shadow. Just a shadow. And finally in 9 and 26 he says, they are passed away as the swift ships, as the eagle that hasteth to the prey. So we can number our years. Every birthday comes around, we number our years. But look what God says in Psalm 90 and verse 12. So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Why do we number our days instead of our years? Because God's only given us one day at a time. One day at a time. To live our life in the knowledge of the will of God is one thing that's going to give us a tremendous blessing. But now, the fourth thing, it's not in James, I'm adding this myself. The fourth reason why I need and you need to take heed to the will of God and let it be our guide in life is because of what Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 5 teaches us. The chastening hand of God. If I disobey God and I neglect His will, then the Lord is going to chasten me. That's what He says in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 5. And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of Him. For whom the Lord loveth, He chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom He receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh, which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure. But He, for our profit, that we might be partakers of His holiness. And it is true that no chastening at the moment is joyous, but afterward it yields a very wonderful fruit of righteousness. So if I don't take God's will into account in my life, then He's going to lay the chastening hand on me. And you know, Jesus could teach us again the brevity of life. And trying to do things outside of the will of God, there in that 12th chapter of the book of Luke. Luke chapter 12. And I began reading in verse 13. And one of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? And he said unto them, Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said, This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. And you know, that's what we all would love to have, isn't it? Many goods laid up for many years. And I'm not saying in itself that's a bad thing. But what I'm saying is, if we try to go pursue that without entering in to God, guiding us, directing us, asking His will in it all, that's the thing this man left out, and this is what God says to him. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee, then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? Seek the will of God. That's what he's saying. Don't make life's plans without ever giving any thought to a God who directs us and guides us and purposes and plans things in our life, who disposes when we propose. He's the master planner. He's the great architect. And if he and his wisdom has designed it all, do you think that he's going to leave you, his child, without a plan in your life? No. He's got a plan. And we need to lean on him to find it and to seek it in his will and not my will. And so he comes up in chapter 4 and verse 16, and he begins to tell us how foolish boasting is. Do not boast, for that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. You know, why do men boast? Well, I think partly it's to cover up our weakness. And my weakness and your weakness is this. I can't even see what the end of this service is going to bring, much less a whole year's worth of living. And yet I boast myself many times, like this foolish people in this chapter, without taking into consideration that I ought to say, if the Lord wills, I will do this or that. So that's not just words on our lips. It's a life that we live by day, for that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. You know, that's exactly what the Apostle Paul lived by. When you turn to Romans chapter 1, Romans chapter 1, you find in verse 10, Paul says, making request, if by any means, now at length, I might have a prosperous journey by the what?
Will of God.
Will of God. That I might have a prosperous journey by the will of God to come unto you. Again, he says in the 15th chapter of Romans, Romans 15 and 32, this is the way the Apostle Paul lived his life. It's the way the Apostle James lived his life. That I may come unto you with joy by the will of God, and may with you be refreshed. And one more. 1 Corinthians 4 and 19, he says, but I will come to you shortly, if the Lord will. If the Lord will. What a wonderful thing to incorporate into a Christian's life, the recognition that God reigns supreme in his will over everything. I know that's so in my life, and I ought to acknowledge that by expressing not my will, but thine be done according to the will of the Lord. So we don't boast because we cannot see the future. We can't see the future, nor can we control the future. So how many of y'all ever been to Mammoth Cave in Kentucky? You go down a lot of twisting tunnels and ways back down in that big cave. And when the lights go out, brother, it's dark. And the tour guide got everybody to pulpit rock. And then he preached a very short sermon in five words. Stay close to your guide. Now, isn't that a sermon for us in our life? Why? Five short words, but how it impacts us. Stay close to your guide. And when the lights go out and it's dark in our life, stay close to your guide. And that guide is none other than your God. The one who has redeemed you and loved you from an eternity past. Wow, what a God He is to bless His children. He is not against you. Do you know that? Sometimes it may seem that way. You know, that's what Jacob felt one time. He said, all these things are against me. But when you turn to Psalm 56 and verse 9, you find what David says about it. In Psalm 56 and verse 9, it's the same thing that Paul said about it in Romans 8 and 31. 56 and 9, he says, or is it 57 and 9? Well, I don't know where it is. But this is what he says. He says, this I know. God is for me. God is for me. He's not against you. In the mouth of two or three witnesses, let every word be established. Paul can come along in the New Testament in Romans 8 and 31 and say, God is not against us. He's for us. You have a guide who is for you through all the maze of life. In all the times when the lights seem to go out and there's nothing but a piercing darkness. Stay close to your guide. He sums it all up in James. He says, if we know to do good and we do it not, to us it is sin. And so if I know to include God into my life and my plans by realizing I can't make a step without the will of God, and I don't recognize that God, to me, it is sin. You got a guide. Stay close to him.